Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 427, titled Gilding the Lily, Japan's Looting of Asia During World War II. This is being recorded on September 29th of 2003. In this broadcast, we're going to be talking about Operation Golden Lily. That is the code name for the Japanese looting of Asia during World War II. This program is a follow-up to a number of other programs, particularly FTR number 290, called the Kido Organization, the Japanese Bormann Organization. In that program, we discussed how much of Japan's loot was then secreted away and then utilized by the Zaibatsu, the post with the giant companies, the family trusts, so to speak, that drove Japan during its fascist and imperial period. We spoke about how that wealth was subsequently recovered and helped to fuel the miracle, unquote, Japanese recovery after World War II, not unlike the way the corporate connections of the Bormann Organization and the Nazi loot during World War II helped to resuscitate the German economy as well. In this book, we're going to be talking about we're going to be talking about Operation Golden Lily, and we're going to be utilizing the book The Yamato Dynasty by Sterling Seagrave and Peggy Seagrave, published by Broadway Books, copyright 1999, the ISBN number 0-7679-0496-6. This program is a prequel, so to speak, for an upcoming interview with Sterling and Peggy Seagrave about their just-released opus titled Gold Warriors, published by Verso. That deals with Operation Golden Lily and what happened to the tremendous loot that was confiscated from Asia by the Japanese in World War II. In this program, however, we're going to focus on the actual looting operations and how the Zaibatsu and related interests, in particular the Japanese imperial family, the royal family, were able to utilize this wealth. And we're going to take a look, we took a look in our last program at how the American corporate partners of the Zaibatsu and the emperor helped to see to it that the status quo was restored in post-war Japan. By the way, the Zaibatsu and their connections to American corporations is discussed at length and in detail in Miscellaneous Archive Show M26. That is available for Spitfire. Turning now to the Yamato Dynasty and discussion of Operation Golden Lily. During World War II, Japan's militarism became a heady mixture of glory and greed as the army and navy embarked upon a binge of conquest and looting from which Tokyo could not extricate itself. We know a lot about the conquest, but amazingly little about the looting. In the Japanese Holocaust, millions were killed and billions were stolen, but the loot vanished. One of the great mysteries of World War II is what happened to the billions of dollars worth of treasure confiscated by the Japanese army from a dozen conquered countries. The answer involves the imperial family, so it is an essential part of this biography. Recognizing after the Battle of Midway in June 1942 that the war was going badly, a number of imperial princes devoted the rest of the war to hiding the loot ingeniously to give Japan a hedge against disaster. This systematic campaign of looting and hiding treasure, codenamed Golden Lily, was under the direct supervision of Hiroshito's brother, Prince Chichibu. Until now, he was assumed to have spent the war on medical leave from the army, recuperating from tuberculosis at a country estate beneath Mount Fuji, nursed by his wife. In fact, he traveled all over occupied China and Southeast Asia, supervising the collection of plunder, using hospital ships to carry much of it to Manila for onward shipment to Japan. From early 1943 till mid-1945, he was in the Philippines overseeing the hiding of this loot in bunkers, in vaults beneath old Spanish churches, and in vast underground tunnel complexes. Golden Lily stripped Asia of currency, gold, platinum, silver, gems, jewelry, art treasures, and religious artifacts, including more than a dozen solid gold Buddhas, each weighing more than a ton. According to Japanese who participated, some $100 billion worth of gold and gems was hidden at more than 200 sites in the Philippines, when it became physically impossible to move the loot to Japan. We have corroborated accounts from eyewitnesses and participants, including Japanese, and members of Prince Chichibu's personal retinue. Faced with Allied invasion of the home islands and the total destruction of Japan's heritage, Emperor Hirohito was finally persuaded to opt for a quick surrender. This was a bitter pill, but it allowed Japan to survive the war with the bulk of its assets intact, including many billions of dollars of loot that would help put the nation back on its feet. I would note that's billions in the currency of the time. It'd be a lot more now. Continuing. Since the war, the gold hidden in a number of sites in the Philippines had been recovered by teams from Japan and other countries, and these recoveries have been verified. A Swiss court disclosed in 1997 that one of the solid gold Buddhas is now in a bank vault beneath Zurich's Kloten Airport, along with a large quantity of other gold bullion recovered by former Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos and held in Marcos' family accounts. In 1997, a Japanese investigative team from Asahi Television was taken to an underground vault in Luzon, where they filmed and took core samples of 1,800 gold bars worth $150 million, gold that was stolen from Sumatra, Cambodia, and Burma. This gold had been melted down in occupied Malaya, recast, and marked in accordance with the accounting procedures of Golden Lily, and then sent to Manila on fake Japanese hospital ships. Treasure looted from China was taken to Japan by way of Korea and hidden in underground vaults in the mountains near Nagano, the site of the 1998 Winter Olympics. Gold bullion aboard ships at the time of surrender in 1945 was sunk in Tokyo Bay and other points along the coast, and some of it has since been recovered. Thanks to Prince Chichibu and Golden Lily, when the U.S. occupation ended in 1952, quote, bankrupt, unquote, Japan was able to begin a miraculous, unquote, recovery on its way to becoming the world's second richest economy. War reparations were dodged, the imperial family evaded punishment, and Japan's financial elite resumed control as if the war had not occurred. Claims that Japan and its imperial family were left virtually penniless by the war would therefore appear to be completely false. War loot also provided a huge pool of black money used by post-war politicians to corrupt Japan's bureaucracy, bringing the country full circle again at the millennium to the verge of economic collapse. Again, in the subsequent book just published by the Seagraves, Gold Warriors, the post-war utilization of this loot is detailed, and it goes way beyond Japan, although it has a lot to do with the perpetuation of the fascist interests who had propelled Japan. It also had a lot to do, as we will see at the end of this program, with the financing of U.S. covert operations during the Cold War period, and also in Gold Warriors, the implications of these funds for the contemporary economy are dealt with at considerable length. Now, back to Operation Golden Lily and the overseeing of this by Prince Chichibu. As the looting of Asia proceeded, it was ultimately, at least temporarily, grounded in the Philippines due to the fact that the American submarine blockade was becoming effective and the shipping of all of this loot back to Japan was no longer altogether feasible. We're going to take a look at that, and we're also going to take a look at one of the most cynical individual aspects of Operation Golden Lily. That was the loading of gold bullion aboard a Japanese cruiser, the Nachii, and then the deliberate sinking of that cruiser by a Japanese submarine in Manila Bay so that the gold could subsequently be recovered. Turning once again to the Amado dynasty. Because of the failure of its economic strategy, Japan's financial rape of Asia became more important than its military conquest. Loot and plunder became the only way Japan could stay afloat and continue to finance the war. Across China and then Southeast Asia and the Malay Archipelago, banks were looted, directors and accountants forced to reveal financial records of clients arrested and extorted, factories stripped, churches, mosques, temples, pagodas denuded of priceless relics, gold leaf peeled from stupas, art removed from museums, and wealthy homes. Most of this was acquired by Golden Lily, which melted everything down to bars and ingots except for some priceless art objects and the solid gold Buddhas, which represented 1,000 years of accumulated wealth from the leading sects in Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, Siam, and Burma. Masses of jewelry were confiscated, the gems priesed out, and the gold or silver melted into bars. Gold looted from Burma, Cambodia, and Sumatra was collected at Ipoh in the Malay Peninsula, a major tin mining center, where it was melted down and recast at a factory owned and operated by overseas Chinese. A Hokkien black marketer named Wu Chai-sin ran the factory for the Japanese in return for a percentage of the loot. There were similar operations in Kuala Lumpur and Singapore. When the gold was recast in uniform bars, they were marked with the Chinese character for gold, the British name for the country of origin, and a number of five-pointed stars indicating their purity. These markings enabled Golden Lily accountants to keep track of the provenance of the gold and its fineness. Until the end of 1942, this treasure was accumulated in Rangoon, Penang, Singapore, and Jakarta, then shipped by sea to Manila for transshipment to Japan. There was no overland route by way of China until the brief success of Operation Ichigo in late 1944. The merchant ships used were painted to resemble hospital ships, one of which, the Awamaru, was sunk by an American submarine anyway in fairly shallow water just off the coast of China. By international agreement, hospital ships are supposed to be immune to attack. Warehouses along the Manila Bay front became clogged with bullion and oil drums full of gems and coins. A 35-mile-long tunnel, half as wide again as a loaded army truck, was dug by POWs so that this loot could be trucked from the bay front to the old Spanish military forts on the eastern perimeter of Manila, where there were catacombs available to hide it. The tunnel is still there, although most Filipinos are unaware of it. According to numerous Japanese sources, Prince Chichibu's 1940 medical retirement was a cover. They claim that Emperor Hirohito appointed Prince Chichibu the new head of Golden Lily in 1940 with Prince Takeda as his deputy, and assert that from 1941 to 1945, they traveled widely throughout the occupied territories to China, Hong Kong, Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, Burma, Malaya, Singapore, Sumatra, Java, Borneo, and the Philippines, overseeing the collection of treasure and its shipment to Japan using the fake hospital ships to avoid Allied attack. Prince Mikasa is also said to have paid a number of visits to his brother in the Philippines, so while nobody has alleged that he had any direct involvement in Golden Lily's activities, perhaps he was aware of them. Prince Takamatsu, according to these sources, did not take part. When the U.S. submarine blockade became effective early in 1943, and the war turned increasingly against Japan, a huge quantity of looted treasure was still in the pipeline, unable to move beyond the Philippines. According to Japanese sources, Prince Chichibu moved Golden Lily's headquarters from Singapore to Luzon, the northern island of the Philippines, where he devoted 2.5 years to inventorying and hiding the treasure in carefully engineered vaults, tunnels, bunkers, and caves at 172 imperial sites. There were many other sites for which the army was separately responsible. According to Japanese who participated, a second inventory team in Luzon was headed by Asaka's son, Prince Asaka Takahito. The Japanese hoped that they would be able to arrange a ceasefire that would allow them to hold on to the Philippines, essentially annexing it, so that they could recover the war loot at their leisure. If they were unable to annex the Philippines, they reasoned that they could still recover the treasure gradually under a variety of covers, which is essentially what did happen after the war. Having gambled and lost, it was essential not to forfeit the plunder which would be needed to rebuild Japan. In the last year of the war, Japan also hid large quantities of bullion at sea, deliberately scuttling ships, including the cruiser Nachii, sunk with all hands in Manila Bay by a Japanese submarine that then machine-gunned all the Japanese crew members who came to the surface. The gold aboard the Nachii was recovered from its hulk in the late 1970s by President Marcos. The Japanese sub I-52, a cargo vessel the length of a football field, was attempting to deliver 2 tons of gold worth $25 million to the Nazi sub-base at Lorient, France, when it was sunk in mid-Atlantic by a U.S. Navy plane. It has now been located, and a recovery operation is underway. Other bullion shipments were made by sub to Europe and South America and deposited in overseas branches of Swiss banks. For decades after the war, the existence of this hidden treasure was regarded by many as sheer fantasy. It served Japan's purpose to have people think so while recovery efforts went on secretly. But in the 1990s, courts in America and Switzerland concluded that billions of dollars of gold were indeed looted by Japan and hidden in the Philippines. In 1997, a team from Japan's Asahi Television was led to a mountain cave in the Philippines where they examined 1,800 of these bars worth $150 million and drilled core samples that confirmed their provenance. They were some of the bars minted in Ipoh. The gold, hidden by Golden Lily during the war, had been discovered in a cave by barefoot Igorot hill people who were afraid to sell it for fear they would be victimized. A Manila contact had informed Asahi in the hope of bypassing the Filipino gold market and dealing directly with Japan. Sources at Asahi Television said they were discouraged from doing a full investigation because of fear of reprisals by Japanese extremists. There is growing evidence confirming that Prince Chichibu was indeed in the Philippines during this period, heading the treasure effort. But a full and detailed study of Golden Lily must be the subject of another book. In Tokyo in the 1950s, after Chichibu's premature death from TB, beginning again. In Tokyo in the 1950s, after Chichibu's premature death from TB, a member of the imperial family confided to a foreign visitor that the army had amassed over $100 billion in treasure, and much of this was hidden in the Philippines where, quote, "It will still take a century to recover," unquote. He confirmed that Chichibu was in Luzon for 2.5 years, escaping to Japan by submarine early in 1945. The involvement of the imperial family in such activities has never been acknowledged in Japan, although in recent years it has been widely discussed in private. Nazi war loot got more attention because of the powerful post-war Jewish lobby, which was able to mount an effective, coordinated campaign for which there was no Asian equivalent. Both wars had horrific consequences. 6 million Jews were killed by the Nazis, but as many as 30 million Asians died as a result of Japan's aggression, 23 million in China alone. And again, note the scale of the Japanese Holocaust in Asia. What we're going to look at next is the private recovery of some of the gold stashed in the Philippines. In an earlier book called The Marcos Dynasty, the Seagraves discuss President Ferdinand Marcos and his liberal utilization of some of this Japanese Golden Lily plunder. One of the private elements that began to utilize the Japanese gold was the John Birch Society, the ultra-reactionary element in the United States. We discussed the John Birch Society, its links to the China lobby, and also the both of their links to residual Japanese fascist elements in RFA number 11, available from Spitfire. By the way, its predecessor, RFA number 10, talks about the MacArthur Group in the military and their very strong links to the 1934 coup attempt in the United States, including their links to the Morgan elements that were involved in that coup attempt. Returning once again to the Amato dynasty and discussion of Operation Golden Lily, then there was Golden Lily, which was dedicated only to so-called imperial loot, plundered treasure that was collected, inventoried, and set aside for the imperial family. If Golden Lily did hide considerably more than $100 billion worth of this treasure in the Philippines, then the Japanese claim of post-war insolvency is rather suspect. During the closing months of the war, American guerrilla forces operating in the mountains of Luzon observed Japanese army units hiding truckloads of very heavy small boxes in caves. They captured and interrogated Japanese soldiers and learned that the boxes contained gold bars. When the war ended, MacArthur's G2 General Charles Willoughby and other intelligence officers backed secret recovery operations that netted huge sums, according to some of the American officers who participated. The gold was slipped into the market cautiously to avoid affecting world gold prices. These recoveries continued intermittently over the years. One such effort involved America's John Birch Society, a virulently anti-communist organization named after an American who was killed by Maoist forces during the Chinese Civil War. In the mid-1970s, the society lent nearly $500,000 to an American treasure hunter to finance a recovery in the Philippines, promising to help him launder up to $20 billion of the recovered gold. The society seemed to believe that it was perfectly correct to break American laws regarding the illegal laundering of money, providing it was done to finance anti-communism. Colonel Lawrence Bunker, a close friend of General Willoughby who took over from Bonner Fellers as MacArthur's chief aide, personal secretary, and spokesman from 1946 until his retirement in 1952, was a charter member of the John Birch Society. None of this was revealed to the War Crimes Tribunal, to the American people, to the Japanese people, or to Japan's victims in other countries. Because none of this was revealed to the War Crimes Tribunal, to the American people, to the Japanese people, or to Japan's victims in other countries, serious questions are raised of ethics and fraud. When MacArthur first arrived in Japan in 1945, the Joint Chiefs of Staff ordered him to arrest key business figures. The directive said, "You will assume that any persons who have held key positions of high responsibility since 1937 in industry, finance, commerce, or agriculture have been active exponents of militant nationalism and aggression," unquote. And then, of course, we have already seen how this was frustrated by Douglas MacArthur. We looked at that in not only FTR number 290, but in particular in the program that preceded this, FTR number 426. What we're going to look at next is something of a look back at the history that took place, but also a look ahead to some of the material that we're going to cover in a future interview with Sterling and Peggy Seagrave about their landmark opus, Gold Warriors, just published in hardcover by Verso. This refers to some of the Operation Golden Lily loot and the Japanese Army loot that was stashed in the Philippines and subsequently recovered by American national security heavyweights and some political allies. And as we will note here and as we will see at greater length, this loot, this gold, had a tremendous post-war role to help finance American covert operations and also to help to finance political operations, and accounts for a fair amount of the liquidity that post-war financial institutions claim. Turning once again to Yamato Dynasty, we refer here to a major recovery of Japanese war loot carried out in Luzon between 1945 and 1948. Severino Garcia Santaromana, a Filipino-American OSS officer and later an officer of the CIA under the direct field supervision of the CIA's General Edward G. Lansdale, oversaw this recovery. Documents show that the massive recovery of war loot were known to OSS Chief General William Donovan, to General MacArthur, to Brigadier General Fellers, and to Herbert Hoover, and later to CIA Director Alan Dulles and his deputies, so it was probably known to President Truman. We must assume that Truman's close associate Pauly was also aware of it when he went to Japan. The Santaromana recovery, the first of its kind, came about in the following manner. In the closing months of the war, American OSS officers fighting alongside Filipino guerrillas observed a heavily laden Japanese hospital ship unloading bronze boxes at Subic Bay. A convoy of army trucks carrying the cargo was trucked into the mountains where guerrillas watched Japanese soldiers carry the remarkably heavy boxes into a cave. When the Japanese sealed and disguised the cave entrance and left, the guerrillas, including one American OSS major, opened the cave and discovered that the boxes contained gold bars. They then resealed the cave. After the war, Santaromana was assigned by Generals Donovan and Lansdale to empty the cave secretly. Documents show that no attempt was made to return this bullion to its rightful owners or even to set up a fund to benefit victims of the war. Instead, The gold bullion was deposited by Santa Romana in 176 bank accounts in 42 countries and became the basis of the CIA's off-the-books operational funds during the immediate post-war years to create a worldwide anti-communist network. This was done by distributing gold certificates to influential people, binding them to the CIA. One single account in General Lansdale's name at the Geneva branch of Union Bank Suisse documents show contained 20,000 metric tons of gold. It's only one of many. Here is a clear precedent to the secret account set up by Colonel Oliver North during the Iran-Contra arms conspiracy of the 1980s, which were trivial by comparison. Some of the bullion accounts that Santa Romana squirreled away were set up for his own private use, with gold bars that he sidetracked during the recovery process. These accounts still exist in New York and elsewhere, and they are the subject of numerous legal actions by people claiming to be Santa Romana's heirs. But there is still a lot more gold in the ground in the Philippines yet to be recovered. Documents also show that one of the big gold bullion accounts set up by Santa Romana was in the name of General Douglas MacArthur. Other documents indicate that gold bullion worth $100 million were placed in an account in the name of Herbert Hoover. Both men were deeply involved in rescuing Emperor Hirohito and suborning witnesses at the Tokyo War Crimes Tribunal. What does this suggest? It suggests that Washington's declarations about Japan being bankrupt in 1945 were highly disingenuous, to say the least, a point that should not be lost on the U.S. Congress or on those many thousands of Pacific War and China War victims still seeking compensation and restitution. And by the way, for historical background and to flesh out one's understanding, I recommend Miscellaneous Archive Show M26, Miscellaneous Archive Show M11, and Miscellaneous Archive Show M42, as well as RFAs 1, 2, and 10 and 11 available from Spitfire. In addition, FTR shows 290 and 291 and 296 deal with the post-war situation of the restitution of Japanese fascism, as well as the rise of Japan, the rise of fascism in Japan. 291 talks about the Japanese fascist links to the Moon organization, and in turn, the Moon organization's links to the Bush family. There will be a detailed annotated description of For the Record 427 in the For the Record section of the Real Audio Equipped Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. Spitfire stocks all of the tapes and all the lectures and programs that I've done over the years. You can reach them at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email mail, at spitfirelist.com. WFMU, well, by the way, I do not get money from the relationship with Spitfire. WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery. Older programs available for download only at a longer URL linked to both the WFMU.org/Dave Emery website and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website as well. The latest pair of For the Record segments are available for download only at spitfirelist.com within a couple of days of the recording of those segments. This concludes For the Record program number 427, Gilding the Lily, Japan's Looting of Asia During World War II, being recorded on September 29th of 2003. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.